Z Police, Erica, and Phil I Am walk into a bar.
Is that your unofficial way to start the episode this week?
Yeah, you know, I know we didn't clap at all, but I think at this point you're a veteran enough. You're used to editing and growing leaps and bounds. Well, I just think it's kind of funny, and you know, do you hand choose our icons every time you import our audio or tracks?
No, I have a few templates for like when everyone's on or for nights like this when it's just Eric and I. It's a Wednesday episode, middle of the week. And on the Monday, we visited you with the Wicknet Awards, and it was me, you, and Phil. Or excuse me, you, I, and Phil.
And Phil I Am.
Philium, or Phil I Am, yeah. And now it's just the three of us, I guess three if you're counting Daenerys, who's sitting here. She's hanging out, and she's planning on coming on the show real soon, I think.
Yeah, she's just in plain clothes, you know, a little dagger by her side. It's not the queenly garb that she's had on her the previous times we've seen her.
We are talking about a new chapter today, and by new, we've been doing chapter by chapter, obviously, as the weeks progress in the off-season or the on-season, whichever you prefer, but few are as exciting as this one, as this is the chapter that follows the epic House of the Undying chapter that so many of you have talked about in the comments section, and some of you have tweeted us and Facebooked about, and that you really, really loved, and this is the chapter that follows that up chronologically, because we're finally getting back with Daenerys after so much else has happened elsewhere in Westeros.
Yeah, it's true, and it feels like a breath of fresh air in a way, because you're in a geographical location where there's not fire in the air raining down on you. You know, it's George, I'm glad he stayed with Blackwater and kind of had that. He just got that done, you know, and it took six chapters. It was Davos, Sansa, Tyrion, Sansa, Tyrion, Sansa. And, you know, finally now we do get to relax kind of, but it's also, it is the aftermath, as you said, of the House of the Undying chapter previously. And shit is about to go down even further. I mean, Dany has to leave Carth now, and really, instead of killing everybody like we thought, you know, probably would have happened, it just seems like she pissed everybody off.
Well, it's so funny that would be the two of us here, because obviously Micah and Selena knew the aftermath, and they kind of saw the television show, and they saw the aftermath of how the show set it up. And going into this, you know, our dialogue being with Zorro at the beginning of the chapter, obviously the show situation didn't happen, and I think we all kind of gathered that by the angry tweets that we saw for like the months following, that it wasn't exactly that way, but I didn't know in what degree it was different. So now we're seeing Daenerys in a Carth that is living with the fact that her and her dragon has basically destroyed and burned down the House of the Undying. And now these people like the Spicers, the Tormelin Brotherhood has got some anger pointed directly at her, and the 13 aren't far away from aggressing either. So, I mean, it's much different than the show painted it, as we knew it would be. But this is certainly much more magical and exciting. You know what I mean? Just it's so deep. It's so deep.
It really is. And it's kind of, I'm trying to think of an analogy that properly works here, but it seems like, you know how we were saying how and people were telling Dany that her presence or the dragon's presence in the world has kind of brought to life a lot of stuff that used to be dormant.
Yeah.
It seems like burning the House of the Undying down only served to ignite other fires around Carth. At least that's what Zorro tells Dany in the beginning of this chapter. And it seems more like he's kind of gossipy about the whole thing. But I wanted to quote here from the chapter, because nobody's words can do it better than George R. R. Martin's himself. She asks, Zorro's telling her to flee or whatever, and she says, "Was it not you who told me the warlocks were no more than old soldiers vainly boasting of forgotten deeds and lost prowess?" And it says Zorro looked troubled. He says, "And so it was then, but now I am less certain. It is said that the glass candles are burning in the house of Urathun Nightwalker that have not burned in 100 years. Ghost grass grows in the garden of Gehenny. Phantom tortoises have been seen carrying messages between windowless houses on Warlock's Way. All the rats in the city are chewing off their tails. Furthermore, the wife of Mathos Malarwen, who once mocked a warlob's drab, moth-eaten robe, has gone mad and will now wear no clothes at all. Even fresh-washed silks make her feel as though 1,000 insects were crawling on her skin. And blind Sebastian, who can forget blind Sebastian? Uh-huh. Come on, Zach.
The eater of
the
eyes.
The eater of eyes can see again, or so his slaves do swear. A man must wonder. he sighed. These are strange times in Koth, and strange times are bad for trade.
So true.
This is crazy shit, dude. Tortoises are carrying messages. I know. What's next?
That's,
what
I, is I next? Literally took, I swear, Eric, I took the same note out of this chapter, and my I highlighted it, and my note only was one word, and I said, shit. I swear, I'm looking at it right now, because this is intense, you know? This is building upon what we saw in the House of the Undying, and as it's expertly quoted later on in the chapter by Jorah, like, how can you believe these things? And he's recollecting so many of the prophetic things that happened inside of the house, and he's saying, how can you believe that? Because you knew the entire time they were just out for your blood. They just wanted you, they wanted your dragons. She's like, yeah, that's true, but there's got to be some truthfulness to all of this, because... I mean, they did have power. Something did happen. I'm not sure if it was just the drugs they gave me before I went in. Like, maybe I was tripping out. But either way, I saw something. So it's mysterious that even someone like Zorro, and basically his entire response here was because he was warning Dany, not only should she leave because it's bad for trade, that I guess he eventually gets to and you know, finally says, like, hey, it's bad for money. But at first he was just like, you better go because the warlocks have some surviving people that are going to be after your ass and you don't want that to happen. And she's just like, you told me they were old ass dudes who eat blueberries all day. You know, like, why am I supposed to be scared of them now? And then, yeah, well, this is happening. So clearly Westeros, clearly what's east of Westeros and all of these deep, rich cultures that are combined in a city like Karth are spicing up. The story's moving somewhere, and I like it.
Well, and that whole debacle with her losing her dragons or whatever for a period of time that happened in the show doesn't happen in the book. It's kind of, you know, it's just, we did talk about that. Maybe it was, like, embellished to give a little bit more to the series, because by the end of this chapter, we're I think, partly into season three's Dany. Even though it's only book two.
Yeah.
Because we encounter the character of Whitebeard. So it's really interesting to see how elements from what we would consider to be the future are present even in this chapter as she's fleeing Karth. But the other cool thing is that Jorah being from Westeros, being, you know, familiar with old tales and that sort of thing, is actually able to corroborate, much to his own dismay, the stuff that Dany saw in her dreams or whatever.
And she's worried about it. This is actually a passage from the book that I wanted to read to a lot of you guys. It says, the warlocks whispered of three treasons, once for blood and once for gold and once for love. So she's considering to herself out loud something that we've seen a lot of you guys writing about and theorizing about that Eric and I have to kind of avoid. But goes on to say, the first traitor, and this is Dany's thoughts, the first traitor was surely Mary Mazdur, who had murdered Khal Drogo and their unborn son to avenge her people. Could Pyat Pri and Zorro Zahan Duxus be the second and the third? She did not think so. What Pyat did was not for gold, and Zorro had never truly loved her, which is true. He's still begging her to marry him, which is just like, come on, man. Give it a rest. Yeah. Really?
She's on to you, dude. She's not going to work.
She went through the House of the Undying and saw crazy stuff. I'm talking about the craziest shit, too crazy for the large budgeted HBO to fit in. Too crazy for that.
You're just saying duck sauce can't excite her all that much.
Yeah,
anymore.
Pretty much. Like, she has got, like, you got to catch up, fellas. Like, it's going to take a couple ships with new names painted in large, easily to read, legible letters to excite Daenerys right now.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny, though, that she should keep so much stock in what she heard in the House of the Undying. But she has a reason to. I mean, it really affects her. She's basically deciding that she's going to be betrayed, that the prophecy should be held to, and she's about to be betrayed twice. Or not about to, but it's in the future. In the same chapter where she's having to go and forge new alliances and find herself some ships.
I didn't think that it was going to happen this way, though, dude. And I don't want to say that I'm glad that it's the two of us, but just right now, because we don't have a guiding light, and we can kind of dish our own little, like, ooh, is this happening? Oh, is this happening? But to me, it's just, I feel like the book has immediately gotten so much better. And I thought it was a great book before, but I read a chapter like this where Daenerys is with her people and they're dressed in plain clothes. And you really think about what's happening. You've got Daenerys and who she is in the book, this small, slim, blonde girl with a knight from Westeros with a big bear of House of Mormont on his chest, right? With some Dothraki people walking around this huge dock. Karth has such a massive port. It's one of the portals to this entire side of the planet. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to call it a planet, like it's so busy and full of so many different cultures speaking so many different languages. It smells of all of these crazy. You just have to read the descriptions in the book.
It's semen and sperm.
Yeah, that too.
Two different things, guys. Two different things.
And I'm just thinking about how deep and exciting this is and all the gambling and interesting shit that's happening. It's just, you know, it's heartwarming to get to this part of the book. And I hope that more of it is like this, because so much of it has been claustrophobic. We've been inside of like throne rooms talking to people. We've been inside small council chambers talking to people. And it's all great because the dialogue is really what makes this story awesome. But so much has happened here. And what Daenerys is doing is really being set in a setting and a storyline that's making her quickly like the coolest character. And so you're wanting more chapters like this. But this is, what is this, only the third or fourth she's had in the entire book so far? Something like that.
Oh, let me look this up. Yeah, it's not many.
Not many compared to the rest. And her gap has been large compared to the rest. I think the fact that we don't have her, like, absence makes the heart grow fonder, obviously, is why she's more favored by readers than show watchers. But I think that she'll quickly regain that pace once the show goes on.
It is five, and it is the final one for Dany, which is kind of sad, actually,
really,
because
is.
She's got a lot of, there's a lot of forward momentum for Dany at the end of this chapter. But it does end without so much as a further word from her. In fact, we've only got six chapters left after this.
We're getting close.
Now that I look at it. So the end of the book is near, but this is where George R. R. Martin has chosen to place Dany's story at the end of the book. And I'm glad that we revisited her, because this chapter, as you say, is rich. It really brings, you know, some new senses, or senses that have been dulled or are really ensnared again. And it just is great to read.
Some things that happen in this chapter, like you said, happen so much further in the show series. And I just have to question the purposes behind this. I feel like I'm a pretty savvy minded person when it comes to adapting content to screen. That's kind of what I do for a living. But what I'm saying is, like, this setup in general, I realize it would have been very ambitious to capture on video, and it's more of a go to Tortuga type of scene like in Pirates, but it's just, it adds so much to the context of what's happening. It's just, it's such a damn shame that so much of Dany's storyline has been left out. You know, it's such a shame.
Well, from a budget standpoint, and I hate for it to always come down to money, but I feel like more of it comes down to money than even we would be comfortable like knowing. But they just had to show all those ships in Blackwater. For Dany to have been like all these ships at the port. But not only that, like the other thing is, think about how they ended up doing it in the end, was with Zaro betraying her and one of her girls, her handmaidens, getting locked in the vault.
Jaquia,
you know, again, very claustrophobic, but completely the opposite of this huge port, you know?
Yeah.
And Barristan Selmy may not have been in season two at all.
He wasn't.
So yeah. They're like, well, rather than bring him back for the last episode, wait until, you know, season three to get him back so they don't have to pay him or whatever, you know, anything like that. So I don't know. We've seen this happen, though, where because they have to give a certain amount of screen time to characters, they kind of make shit up and embellish. Like even Dany, who only had five chapters, and I believe Tyrion had like 15, they kind of may have gotten pretty equal screen time in this series just because you've got to do that.
Yeah, or maybe even more to Dany's favor. Like I understand, and you're totally right. It comes down to budget, and it also comes down to the real estate of what we actually have for these characters in the story, because with Daenerys being such a big person, like I'm thinking about the art for the last season, there was two main people. There was Tyrion and there was Daenerys. There's Peter Dinklage, there's Emilia Clarke. You know, that was the orange and blue branding. And then a lot of the other key characters were photographed and designed in the same fashion, but these are the two that you'll see prominently displayed on like ads and HBO Go and stuff like that. So we understand that we need Daenerys to be stretched out. And so I think about what they did to replace what's happened at the end of this book. And so what happened at the end of this book with Daenerys in her last chapter here, she's visited by a few new people that we'll get to in a bit. But rather than doing that now in the show, what they did was replace that with the entire slave storyline sleeping with Zaro and with her happening upon Zaro. And that really cleanly tied up the Zaro storyline. That tied up the vault thing that they also created. That would be a device later on for that last episode. But it also gave them a way to make money and get the ships that they sail on in the beginning of season three and that they procure in this way at the end of this
book. Either way, they end up with a ship.
Right. And it was tightly tied up. You know what I mean? It was compact, yeah. and you're done with Karth after that. Like, you feel like it's been released. And this way, it's more open-ended. In this way, it's more the majestical, large city that we wish could have been captured better, and that lots of things are happening, you know? But in the show, it's more like, that was a weird place, kind of Egyptian or whatever, and now that's done.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, I think another reason this chapter exists, like, it would have been on quite a cliffhanger. Like, it would have been a Theon style cliffhanger if he hadn't put this Daenerys chapter in. So I am very glad he did it again. But you know, I mentioned that she does run a few ideas by Jorah. I was really glad to see her and Jorah talking in this chapter. You know, they're just kind of riding along, and he's looking out for her and all this stuff. He's her knight, you know. He's her knight. But she talks about seeing her brother, and he's all skeptical, and she's like, well, he had this harp. And Jorah's like, okay, he did have a harp. And they just figure out, you know, I don't know what Jorah thinks of all this magic. You know, he doesn't really believe in it, but, he really doesn't deny. He kind of indulges her here, into believing that she did, in fact, at least some of the things she saw were true. But he asks her, especially about the blood feast. He's like, what could that mean?
Was I there?
You know, really? what relevance does it happen? Because you're doting on that, and then you're ignoring the fact that there are real warlocks here in Karth who want to kill us.
Yeah.
So he's kind of an action man. He just wants to get the hell out of there.
Absolutely. And I think that he's been bothered by the entire situation up to this point, and he didn't want her to go to the tower anyway. So all of this is just bad on top of bad on top of bad. He's like, listen, let's get a ship. Let's leave. You know, let's get out of here.
Well, in order to get a ship, they have to go in with these guys who they first spot kind of following them. And this is they kind of just go down to the docks.
So well,
they want
to
buy a ship. They're just like, okay, well, they've outstayed their welcome. They realize Danny realizes that even the 13 are like, instead of giving her gifts, they're now like eyeing her.
Taking her gifts back, basically.
Oh, yeah. Zara wanted his gifts back. What a jerk.
Well, because he finally gave her a last choice. He was like, all right, give me a son. We'll leave on my pleasure barge. Eh? She's like, no, dude. He's like, all right, well, then go. He literally said that. Then go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how badass is Danny? Because he offered her, what, 10 ships or whatever?
30.
And she's like, well, how many ships do you have? And he's like, well, 84, not including the pleasure barge. Okay, how many do the 13 have? Oh, about 1,000. Uh-huh. How many do the Spicers? And she's like, look, dude, I have 3 dragons. They are the only 3 dragons in the world.
Yeah.
And so I think it's fair that in exchange for one of my dragons that you want so badly, I get 1/3 of all the ships in the world.
And he doesn't like
that. You can't argue with it.
No,
it's perfect.
It really is. It's good math.
It's really good math.
A few ships. And it's like, I want to think to myself, Zara, what the hell are you going to do with a dragon, man? Like, like really, honestly, what are you going to give it a golden plate? Like, this isn't Smaug. He's not going to be impressed. Like, he wants to kill shit and cook fish.
But, I mean, when they do catch on to these guys, I guess Strong Belwas, his name is,
yeah.
This short, fat dude. What's the word? Eunuch.
Yeah.
And then this guy, Whitebeard. And at first, when Arston. The book said bald-headed eunuch, I was like, oh,
surely
what
not.
The hell is Varys doing this? What? Why is Varys here? You know, that's a little too close for comfort, but fortunately it wasn't him. It's just another bald eunuch.
Yeah, I mean, this was so masterfully done in this chapter with a little bit of comedy that I really loved. They were walking along, and Jorah's like, check this out. All right, I don't want you to turn around. He puts his hand on the smaller of her back, and he's like, hey, Danny. Let's just say he calls her D. He's like, hey, D, we're getting followed by some people. And he's like, don't look behind you. Come here, let's check this out. And they walk over to this salesman who's selling a bunch of brass shit, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, look at all this brass stuff. And he's like, oh, but this is the greatest brass in the world. And for you, Mother of Dragons, 30 honors for this beautiful brass plate. And Jorah's just holding it up because they're using it as a mirror, looking behind them, like checking the scene out. They're like, all right, this guy, he looks like he's from Westeros. His other friend with him, I don't know if he's actually with him here. Let's turn to the side, act normal for a second, then we'll check again. Just brilliantly done.
Yeah, very much so. And it's a little bit of misdirection on George's part because they are trying to avoid these two guys as they walk along. But it turns out that somebody else entirely hands Danny a box, and it's just like, this is for you, Mother of Dragons, all sorts of stuff. This box contains, I guess she called it a manticore,
mm-hmm.
but it looked as like a scarab sort of thing that maybe would have killed her. I think this directly replaces the scene with that little girl,
yeah,
wasn't it a little girl with blue, you know, nightshade eating in Astapor?
Yep.
Where, but again, the effect is the same because Whitebeard, aka Barristan Selmy, comes along and swats it essentially out of her hands and actually hurts her hand and gets into a little trouble himself. But, you know, she's able to clear it up pretty quickly and says, "You've saved me." And that really endears her to these guys who were shady, who were following her. And all of a sudden she's taking him in and she's deciding what color curtains the chips will have. And yes, they're picking out draperies and rugs and stuff. All of a sudden they spend the rest of the day adorning all these ships for Denny. Yeah. They just say, "Hey, we're here from Illyrio." The fat guy. They don't even say his name. They're like, "This big guy with stink in his hair."
Oh, yeah. That's one guy I know.
Sent us. And she's like, oh, Illyrio. I know him. It's very possible, though. I mean, you got to think about, like, the potential for it to be a fake. You know, anybody who knows who she is would probably also know that Illyrio housed them for so long, her and her brother. You know, just kind of, I don't know. It's a little, I think she should be treating it a little bit more suspiciously than she is.
I agree. I think that that's one of the things that we're supposed to take away from this chapter is that Daenerys is a little too trusting. I mean, she's allowed herself to get in so many of these situations because of that. And she's still young and naive and figuring things out. And much to the dismay of the police, much to the dismay of Jorah. It's like it's a kid's story. It's like Home Alone or something. You know, like people are going to make a mistake. You know what I mean? Like she's a vigilante. If this is who she chooses to trust, I mean, I can honestly say that I wasn't sure that it was going to be Barristan. I was assuming that at this moment they were just going to introduce Barristan, but they said Arson Whitebeard. So I thought that's cleverly disguised, sort of a similar name. But the fact that Jorah doesn't completely recognize him still makes me wonder a bit. Like, surely it can't be anyone else, so let's just assume that it's him. But I would have figured that Jorah would have had a better recognition for the Barristan Selmy.
He is the Barristan Selmy. I think it is important to point that out.
Yeah, exactly.
Jorah's defense, he does say there were thousands of knights at, cause Whitebeard says he recognizes him from, that thing on Pike and, the other one. He nearly unseated, the Kingslayer.
Yeah. Go Jorah.
At Lannisport or whatever. And Jorah does kind of recognize this knight, but he just can't pin a name on him. I think in that episode of the TV series in season 3, when Barristan was revealed to be Barristan, I think it was right away, right?
Yeah.
I think Micah or one of the listeners of the show did say, like, okay, and the book's a little different because he apparently goes on, you know, without us knowing his true identity for almost all of next book, I think.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's like a big deal, it's a big reveal who he really is in the books is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad I kind of like being clued in a little bit though, that this isn't just some other guy. Like he is in fact, we know he's from Westeros, but this is the Barristan Selmy. Like we can tell easily that his motives aren't, you know, against Dany's because of the way Joffrey treated him.
Right.
Like maybe that's the thing maybe that's the whole catalyst here is, you know, we were supposed to question him and his loyalty. But if we knew who he was, we wouldn't, because he clearly has a reason to hate the Lannisters who dismissed him.
Yeah, I think this Strug Belwis character and the fact that let's just call him Barristan as his squire, air quotes, in this situation. We're meant to think that that's weird because he's clearly the better spoken one and has a little bit more intelligence, referring directly to the kind of situation that she and Jorah are both in. And the fact that he also recognized Jorah from the Lannisport tourney, like it also kind of points in the direction that there's more to this guy, and Whitebeard being a nickname, not being an actual surname, is interesting enough to assume that there's more of a mystery to this guy. But it kind of disappoints me that we actually know this, because I can hear in my head the joy and excitement that a lot of you sullied listeners went through when you were reading it for the first time and got to discover, like, organically that this was Barristan Selmy that had been traveling and helping Daenerys the entire time. You know, like, that'd be kind of cool at the same time.
You know, he basically just cut a vowel out of his first name, if you think about this, from Barristan to Arston.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a child tries to say Barristan. Arston, yeah.
Well, needless to say, he's here. This big ass dude, a small, tiny, very tiny, like, I'm thinking of the genie from Aladdin style vest, except it's iron, you know, with all of his scars, the people he fought in the pit. And, you know, he's not getting along with the Dothraki, and you can tell that hijinks are ahead. There's a very, it's a very cute way. I don't want to say cute in the midst of all this danger and destruction, but it's a very jovial way to end the chapter and to kind of lead Danny's story forward, because in this off season for George between books, I can just imagine all the wonderful ideas he's thinking of where they will go next. And they specifically mentioned Danny looking at the slaves when they were going around ship from ship and talking to the captains and trying to get a price. The slaves from Astapor, from Slaver's Bay, Astapor. So it's like, okay, well, if we want to go ahead and use a clue, like using context clues in the chapter, they'll probably go that way. Probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's really all we know of where they could go next. But the great news is she does end the chapter with ships. And this is one of my favorite things about this chapter. But Whitebeard says, "The great cog, Sedulian, is birthed at the end of the quay, and the galleys, Summer Sun and Jozo's Prank are beneath the... Jozo's Prank. I would not ride a boat. I would not want to ride on a boat called Jozo's Prank." And she's like... Well, she's still trying to find a lot of relevance in what she heard at the House of the Undying. Yeah. So this three heads has the dragon. Yeah. She thinks to herself, and she asked Jorah that earlier in the chapter. She's like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "Oh, I don't know. It's your sigil." Three she's heads. Like, "I know that. What does it mean?" "But what does it mean, Jorah? What does it mean?" Anyway, she says, "I shall tell my people to make ready to depart at once, but the ships that bring me home must bear different names." And he's just like, "Eh, okay. Fine. What do you want?" He's like, she says, "Vhagar, Meraxes, and Balerion." "Paint the names on their hulls in golden letters 3 feet high, Arston. I want Arston. Every man who sees them to know the dragons are returned." Now, I don't think this was ever stated before, but they were the names of Aegon's three dragons that he had a long time ago. They were the big three. One of them, I think, has a skeleton inside, like, King's Landing inside that. I think that's the skeleton of one of them.
What sexier names to name your new ships? You know what I mean? There's three Baraxes. Of them. The best things come in threes. That's what I hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have named them the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, you know, just for old times' sake.
I swear to you, dude, oddly enough, I'm in the farmhouse, and there used to be wallpaper when I was a child that was in this room, and the wallpaper was those boats.
Dude, no way.
Yeah, I swear to God, that's so weird in this room.
That is a little weird.
That is weird.
That's funny. Well, we've reached, obviously, the end of this chapter, and hell, that's an own of itself. But I think it's time for owns.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump right into it. I think that I'm going to give my own to... It's so hard because you could give Jorah an own for just being the grumpy older friend that, you know, has quietly nudged himself into the friend zone. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, he knows that. He's at the point where he's showing her brass plates, which leads me to the person that could be my next own. And I think that the brass plate salesman will probably just get my own. And it might go to Danny because this happened, but the own goes to the salesman nonetheless for starting at 30 honors, which was an egregious price, Eric. Can we agree that his entire wares on the table wasn't even worth that? You know what I mean?
Well, we don't know. I'm just saying. We don't know until she says that, her interior monologue.
I'm just saying. It's just, I don't know. It didn't seem like it was worth it. But he eventually works from 30 honors, which is their currency, okay, to one honor. Or was it two? It was either way.
It was either two or four. And she basically says, "Jorah, pay this man before he kills himself."
And yeah, pay this man before he kills himself. And they bought the damn plate. The manicure happened.
Now she has a plate. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it works as like a blinder. She can reflect the sun off of it.
It's like the hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Oh, that would be cool.
You got 1 year to make it economy. So let's get the Kickstarter out.
1 year to make literally everything in that. I did see an article about a flying car that happened.
Well, those shoes. Nike has those shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they don't actually work. You know that, right?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, they fashioned it. They made, like, the power laces, but they don't actually have power laces, retarded.
I'm just going to choose to believe that they work, you know?
Well, I'm going to choose to believe hoverboards are real.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to choose to believe that you're going to give your own right after we get done talking right here.
It's true. My own goes to Strong Belwas for a line that he has. This is Danny saying, "Rise, Arston Whitebeard. Be welcome, Strong Belwas. Sir Jorah, you know, Co-Ago, Co-Jogo are blood of my blood. They crossed the Red Waste with me and saw my dragons born." Belwas comes in. "Horse boys!" Belwas grinned toothily. "Belwas has killed many horses in the fighting pits. Horse boys, they jingle when they die."
Oh, the bells.
And he antagonizes Ago so badly. It says, Ago's Arak leapt to his hand. And he says, "Never have I killed a fat brown man. Belwas will be the first."
Right.
So he's stirring shit. It's uneasy acquaintances. It's uneasy alliances. This is what these books are all about here. Danny's just kind of taking them at their word that these ships are for her, that they will take her where she wants to go.
So much hijinks is promised for the future, you know, just from this chapter alone. You're just like, what is going to happen with these people? Much like the hijinks promised when we transition very casually into the section of the show where we read things that you have sent us, the listeners of our program, Game of Owns.
Yes, indeed. And we got an email that is relevant to today's chapter. This is from Tim Mulligan. And he says, this Danny chapter is another one of those things that never could have been done on screen. George leaves the readers in the dark for quite a while with this white beard character. However, on TV, it was always going to be obvious it was Barristan Selmy.
Yeah.
I could seriously use some strong Belwis on the show, but alas, I don't think he's going to make the cut.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I think Belwis is probably out of the picture just because they're a package deal.
Definitely.
You know, they both come from Illyrio. They both come. The fact that he hasn't shown up yet means he probably won't.
Yeah. I mean, we can recast the Mountain 17 times, but Belwis, hell no.
Well, it's just like the Mountain. That's why they can get away with it. Like, I don't necessarily agree with what Tim said here about it would have been obvious it was Barristan Selmy because I look at these new faces, though. I don't recognize who they are. You know, there are so many little faces on the show of little characters because they cast them. They do cast them well. I'm not saying the cast aren't memorable, but I would have trouble placing exactly where he was on before. I would have been like, who is that? Or I would have called up Mike and been like, Mike, who is that? You know, because I don't think, even if I recognize the face, it's kind of like Jorah here. He can recognize the face, but he couldn't put a name to it.
Right.
And until you can identify who that man actually is, you don't know really all that much about him at all.
Yeah, but the people that pause and screenshot and post it online for everyone to examine, they know.
Well, I think it's right. It's a visual thing versus like not – because these characters have never seen Barristan, or at least Danny has never seen him before, but the reader or the viewers have.
Thanks, Tim Mulligan. I appreciate the email.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you, Tim.
Should we transition on to Facebook here where we invite our listeners to kindly scrawl upon our wall with whatever extremities they choose necessary?
Extremities. We do have a very timely post for the new year. Somebody wrote on our Facebook wall, this is Robin Perry. He says, I'm surprised you all haven't mentioned this already, but in 2014, we can look forward to not only season 4, but an exciting book release.
Here's the news.
This book cover that is posted here along with this post says, number one Westeros best-selling author. The book is My Poor Life Choices, a tell-all memoir, and it's by Theon Greyjoy.
What is said may never die.
His face in this is very gleeful. For them to be his poor life choices. But hey, I'd buy that book.
Yeah, it's in the middle of his speech in Winterfell, right before he had a spear to the back of the noggin. So, Robin, thank you for this book cover. I really hope that you made this. If you didn't, that's still great. I see it's from gameoflaughs.com. I still hope that you went on there and made it, whatever the hell that is.
And in case people thought that we forgot that Christmas was on a Wednesday this past year, we did have two posts, actually. First one from Sarada Nunziata, who said, actually, it's a picture of the nativity scene.
Yes.
And, of course, the camel in the background.
Just looking fervently.
Is just trolling. And it says, hey, guys, guess what day it is? And they all say, shut up, camel.
Yeah. I think it's the baby that was saying, shut up, camel, though. If you look closely.
Oh, the baby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The mouth's probably open. Could have been.
And the second one, very similar also, from Tab DeBiase. It's a picture of a camel with a Santa hat on. It says, oh yeah, uh-oh, guess what day Christmas is on this year? We have a thing for camels. You know, one third of our sigil is a camel.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal in the show. And we appreciate everybody who contributes to our ever-growing stock of camel things, balls, pictures.
Camel swag.
Memes, swags. Camel swag.
Well, it is hump day. You know, the hump day episode comes every week, so why not celebrate it?
Why not, in fact, celebrate it? And that's about it for the Facebook content that we've got recently, but we do encourage you to always be scrawling on our walling.
Always be scrawling instead of closing.
We want to remind everybody that if they want to submit content to us or comments, theories, owns, because we do source listener owns as well, you can contact us in three ways. You can do it on our Facebook, facebook.com/Game of Owns. You can do it on Twitter, twitter.com/Game of Owns. or email contact@gameofowns.com.
And remember, those little TNT poppets you can buy at the fireworks stand, like around or near 4th of July, if you throw them, for all you Zelda fans out there, they explode and you can pretend they're Deku Nuts for your friends. They make a tidy little pop and they're magical and delicious. Be sure to write us about stuff like that, because this community exists because of you. We read some very, very kind words following our live show Sunday evening and then the subsequent posting of that episode on Monday. And it just goes without saying that we make the show for you guys. We enjoy creating this together because it's not only fun, but because thousands of you get to experience this along with us. And we're big fans of the series. And it's just awesome when you guys communicate and understand that we're all in this together. You know, it's a big, happy, fun time. It's one of the more gleeful things I'll ever say in my life.
You know, the next episode, we get to focus on Arya. It's also been a while since we've heard from her.
Keep your stomachs empty. Look for Friday's episode and another hearty helping of some weasel soup. That is Eric Skull.
That is Zach Louie. And this is the thing that we do now.
Yeah, sleep tightly in your beds.
Visions of sugar plum dancing into your heads.
And your Uncle Ted.
And Campbell. I almost said Campbell's tomato soup. You know, Campbell's.
Campbell's camel soup.
Humpty.
It's magically delicious. Get Jenny in the Block stuck in my head.
Do, 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 do.
Rangers. All right.
Rangers.